Today we're going to talk about one of the most enigmatic, perplexing, confusing, vague stories in all of Chumash, which is the story of Mei Meriva. Moshe's sin at Mei Meriva. And the commentators have really struggled since the Torah has written to be able to try and understand what exactly did Moshe do. I think I've seen over, while preparing for this year, over 15 suggestions trying to, what was the sin, what caused Moshe to sin, and everyone, you know, starting from Rashi, really quoting Chazal, all the way through modern-day commentators, Rabbi Sachs, and Rabbi Nachum Leitag, Rav Hirsch, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, everyone's going to have their own take as to exactly, again, what was the sin, the motivation of the sin, etc. So today what I want to try and do is to begin with understanding first what makes the story so confusing, why is it so unclear, and to try and offer, you know, just a few of the, I'm not going to just list off the 15 suggestions because that's not fun. So we're trying to do some of the more famous ones, some of the more interesting ones. I'm trying to understand the story. So if we start in source number one, we have the beginning of the story. And because of its enigmatic nature, all the commentators are going to be taking over these psukim with a microscope, trying to say, pick up on every single little detail, and I have this detail which might explain the story, or this detail which might explain the story, and, you know, we'll run with it. For example, we start in Pasuk Aleph, that when does this happen? You know, you usually look at Mei Meriva, you don't start at the beginning in Pasuk Aleph, but it happens. Miriam dies, and Miriam's buried there. So, you know, Rashi quotes Chazal that Miriam, B'schus Miriam, there was a well, and that's why the Jews are going to be lacking for water at Mei Meriva, and that could be the explanation. But Rabbi Sachs has a whole drush as to Miriam's presence and the grief of not having her there, and how that put Moshe and, you know, anyone who's ever lost a sibling, and how they're, you know, facing the clutches of death now, and that was what enveloped Moshe. And we're going to see, like, every single detail here is really just is put under a microscope. And we all know the story. There's no water. Everyone comes charging to Moshe and Aaron in Pasuk Beis. And in Pasuk Gimel, they say, they start fighting with Moshe. We'd better to us have died in Egypt rather than here in the desert. Why are you taking us in the desert just to kill us and our animals? Don't take us out of Mitzrayim. You said you're taking us to this place flowing with milk and honey. We have nothing here. We're in the desert. We can't even have water. And what is Moshe's response in Pasuk Vav? Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron mivnei hakahal al Pesach olmoed vayiplu al pneihem vayirach vod Hashem aleihem. Moshe and Aaron, you know, are discouraged. They go to the olmoed to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu what to do. They fall on their faces, and Hashem's presence come down. Some understand that this was their sin, that Moshe and Aaron should have showed the people who was boss and put them in their place, or done a miracle on their own. Again, everyone's looking at every single detail in the story. Then Hashem told...
Isn't it also partially doing so? They saw everything.
Correct.
This is the 40th year. It's not like...
This is the end.
It's not like yesterday they were in the desert. They've been, if they have no water, they could go and say, can you please ask Hashem
right.
for this water? Just like they're going to ask Hashem, please save us from the fiery serpent, and then Hashem, you know,
right.
have some derech eretz instead of like...
Have some derech eretz, and Bnei Yisrael is definitely going to be somewhat at fault, but the perplexing part isn't whether Bnei Yisrael did something wrong, even though we're going to see that that is this might be disputed. But the perplexing part is really going to be on Moshe and Aaron's sin / punishment. So what is Hashem's instructions to Moshe? Hashem tells him to take a staff, which is going to be important in a couple minutes. Gather everyone together in Pasuk Ches. You know, you and Aaron, speak to the rock in front of everyone, and it will give water. You'll take water from the rock and give it to everyone to drink. And then Moshe takes the staff from before Hashem. There's some people who are convinced that the staff is the key to the story. You could check out Rav Hirsch and how it's a reminder of how Moshe's made absolutely no progress from the last time he's had to use the staff 40 years ago. And Rav Schwab also thinks that the staff is playing a crucial role. Rabbi Nachum Leitag. There are a lot of people who want to point out that the staff is having some type of symbolism, but we won't get into that right now. But he takes the staff, you know, Moshe takes the staff, and then famously he goes, gathers everyone together by the rock. He says, "You rebels, what are you doing? We'll get back to that line in a minute." Moshe takes up his staff, hits the rock twice, water comes out, everyone drinks. That's the story. And the question is, what did Moshe do wrong? And if you think Moshe didn't do something wrong, you know, Moshe listened to Hashem. He called them rebels, like you pointed out. They were rebelling. They were doing something wrong. They were complaining. Where's your Emunah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu after 40 years in the desert? We've been through this before. Hashem is taking care of us. You happen to your forefathers. You're the generation that's supposed to be the good generation, right? Your parents died because of Chet HaMeragim and the lack of Emunah, and now you guys are going to not have Emunah. And Moshe does exactly what he's supposed to do, and he hits the rock twice, which again will be debate. Every single detail in the story is going to be under a microscope. And water comes out, and it seems pretty like a normal story. Moshe takes care of everyone. And then the next two psukim are some of the most challenging psukim in the entire Torah, and that is not an exaggeration. If you look in source number 2, we're at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, ve'el Aaron. So Hashem says to Moshe and to Aaron, which is going to be really important in a second. Yan lo hamantem bi. You did not believe in me. Lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to sanctify me in the eyes of Klal Yisrael. Lachein lo saviu es hakal hazeh el ha'aretz asher nasati lahem. You cannot be the ones to bring b'nei Yisrael to the Holy Land, to Eretz Yisrael. You are going to have to die in the desert. And there's so many questions that are going to be happening here. Number one, you're going to tell me the Rashi's pshat, the Rashi, which we'll get to, that Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock, the most famous pshat out there. So what did Aaron do wrong? Why is Aaron getting punished?
Aaron didn't hit the rock. He didn't stop him from hitting it.
Oh, he didn't stop him from hitting it? Is that how free choice works?
You heard what Hashem said, speak.
Okay.
You see your brother.
So you're saying that when, in my picture, when Aaron's standing right next to Moshe, he should have grabbed his staff.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. Could be. But would you get punished as severely as the person who hit deviated? Okay, you're saying is that Aaron's an accomplice? Could be. Okay, lo he'emantem bi. You're not going to believe in me? That Moshe and Aaron didn't have Emunah? Moshe and Aaron, if Moshe doesn't have Emunah, we're in a bad place, because our whole Torah is from Moshe Rabbeinu. So if our whole Torah was written by an apikoros, chas v'shalom, so where would we be right now? What does it mean that Moshe and Aaron didn't have Emunah? Furthermore, does the punishment fit the crime? You're going to tell me that Moshe deviated slightly and hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. So because of that, Moshe and Aaron are not going to go, are greatest leaders. They're not going to go into Eretz Yisrael ever. As a result, they're going to die in the desert, just like that was the fate of the Chet HaMeraglim. Was Moshe and Aaron sin on such a level? So if it just ended there, we'd be like, okay, there's a lot of problems, but it gets worse. Right, it gets worse. It gets worse before it gets better. The next pasuk says, "Hey, Mimi Rava Asher Ravu Bnei Yisrael Hashem VaYikadosh Bam." Hashem is sanctified through the story. Okay, but there are a ton of psukim that describe the sin. So we have to, put those under a microscope also. And how is this sin being described in other contexts? So let's just take a look for a second in sources 3 through 5. We're in Perek Chaf, Psukim Chaf Gimel through Chaf Dalet, source number 3. Vayomer Hashem al Mel Shav Aaron, Behor Ha'har, al Gvul Beretz Adom Lemor, that Aaron's about to die. Ye'asef Aaron el Amav, ki lo yavo el Ha'aretz, asher nasati livnei Yisrael. Again, we're just a few psukim later from after the story. Al asher mirisem es pi lame miriva. Not you, Moshe, but you in plural. You, Moshe, and Aaron have rebelled against me at me, Meriva. You have rebelled against me, and therefore Aaron's going to die now. Rebellion? A rebellion? That's what Moshe and Aaron did at me, Meriva? As you think it's just once, fool me once. The source number 4, now we're already outside of Parshas Chukas, so we're not even in the context anymore. So we're in Bamidbar Chav Zayin, Psukim Yud Beis through Yud Dalet. So Hashem tells Moshe and Pasuk Yud Beis to go up to the mountain, see the land that I'm going to give to you, and then you're going to die just like Aaron, your brother, died. And then in Pasuk Yud Dalet, Ka'asher merisim pi ben bartzin. You again rebelled against my word in Midbar Tzin, b'mirivas haida, lahakdisheni b'mayim le'neihem, hei mi mirivas kadesh Midbar Tzin. You and Aaron have re Bell against me, another description of rebellion. And if you thought that, you know, twice was enough, let's look at toward the end in Parshas Hazinu, end of the Torah. In source number 5, Hashem tells Moshe, again, to go up to Har Nevo, where he is going to die now. He's going to die in that mountain in Pasuk Nun. And then, why is he going to be having this fate right now in Pasuk Nun Aleph? Al Asher Me'altim Bi. Besoch B'nei Yisrael, we had a Chabura in the Kola this week about Mi'ila. Right? Mi'ila, that he, again, the translation here is trespassed against me. Besoch B'nei Yisrael, B'meim Rivas Kadesh B'barzin, and you didn't sanctify me. So we have a lack of amunah, rebellion, and ma'altim, which is usually used for getting improper benefits for something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. What is going on? What did they do wrong? Also, it's one thing Moshe Rabbeinu, but what about Aaron? But it gets even worse because we have other psukim. So there's all these psukim that we've read. Who does it make it sound like sinned at Mei Meriva? Whose sin was it? Moshe, Aaron, it's all their fault. They rebelled, they lacked emunah. But there are psukim which seem to not indicate that. So if we look at sources, again, 6 through 9, so we have Dvarim Perek Aleph. Again, it's important maybe to keep in mind that Sefer Dvarim is mostly Moshe's soliloquy. But if we look in source number 6, so it's right after the Chiyut HaMeraglim. Moshe's describing chastising the Jews over the Chiyut HaMeraglim. He says that Kaliv is going to live in Pasuk Lamed Vav and go to Eretz Yisrael. But then Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglauchem leimor. That Hashem is angry at me because of you. Not because I rebelled. Not because I lacked emunah. Because of you. Gam ata lo savo sham. Because of B'nai Yisrael. That it's B'nai Yisrael's fault that Moshe is not going into Eretz Yisrael. But what does that mean? We just said that Moshe is not going to Eretz Yisrael because he rebelled. Because he lacked emunah. Because he was ma'altem bi. So what does it mean, biglauchem? Again, if you think that's a one-time usage, it's not the case. Similarly, in Dvarim Perek Gimel, Psukim Chav Gimel Tchavalv, in the beginning of Veschanim, famously, Moshe davens to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, that he wants to see Ebrana Veres, Eretz Atova. And what does Hashem see? Hashem say, Vayisaber Hashem bi lima'anchem, that Hashem was angry because of you, for your sake. So it could mean that, you know, Hashem was justifying, defending B'nai Yisrael from Moshe Rabbeinu, but with combined with Biglal Chem, and we're going to see some of the other instances, it sounds like that the reason why Moshe is not going to go into Eretz Yisrael and get his request denied is not because of his own actions, but rather it's a result of Klal Yisrael. It's Lema'an Chem. Similarly, in Dvarim Perek Dalet, source number 8, that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim to be a nation, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, V'Hashem Hisanaf Bi Al Divrei Chem, that Hashem is angry at me because of you. And he took Vayishava Levilti Avriyas Yarden, and he said, took a shvua that I will not be able to go over the Yarden into the Eretz Yisrael, Levilti Vo El Arza Tova, Asher Hashem Lokecha Nosin Lecha Nachala. We see throughout Sefer Dvarim, who's getting blamed for Mei Meriva and Moshe's ultimate punishment of not going into Eretz Yisrael? It's not Moshe. It's not Aaron. It's B'nai Yisrael.
But that's Moshe saying it.
So that's Moshe saying it. So it could be Moshe's, you know, we don't trust Moshe as one of our, there's only a couple of Yud Gimel of Yikarim that are put Moshe on a pedestal. So maybe we'll say Moshe was biased. But Tehillim, we have Tehillim Perek Kavav, which is all about Hashem being upset at Bnei Yisrael for things that they did. In source number 9, Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vayaksifu al Mei Meriva, that they angered him, the people, angered Hashem at Mei Meriva. Vayera leMoshe Bavuram, that Hashem did bad to Moshe because of, not Moshe, not Aaron, but because of B'nai Yisrael, ki himru es rocho, they embittered his spirit, vayivate b'sfasav, we'll talk about a couple of minutes what exactly that pasuk is referring to. But that's not Moshe talking, right? That is David HaMelech. We're in Tehillim. And who's being blamed? Who's being blamed?
B'nai Yisrael.
So,
who's talking?
In Tehillim? David. David HaMelech.
Oh.
King David. So for the most part, we assume, based on the Maamar Basra, King David wrote most of Tehillim, and then we have to figure out exactly each mizmor, whether other people also contributed. You could look at Rabbi Lichtman's from the Kolel's introductory shir to Tehillim. He gave a Tehillim shir this year, and he spoke about it all in shir number one, so it's easy to find. Who's the author of Tehillim? But either way, where we are right now is we don't know what the sin is. Why is Aaron getting punished? Is it Moshe and Aaron's fault, or is it Bnei Yisrael's fault? And those are all the questions that we're left wondering. And we're starting to realize right now is that there's a tension in the psukim that, you know, there's a reason why you have over 15 explanations of exactly what's trying to happen. So I just want to...
Besides all this, there's another problem.
Yeah.
Because at the end of Parshas Shemos, I think Ravayu, our favorite one, Hashem told Moshe go to Paro, mm-hmm. and he goes to Paro, and then it gets worse for them. There it says, "You will see what I will do to Mitzrayim." And then Rashi famously brings the letter, says, "You will see that, but you're not going to Israel." So it's already before right. this ever happened.
Right. So the psukim definitely don't sound that way. That's Rashi quoting Chazal. Right. The psukim clearly make it sound like it is a result of what happens at Mi Meriva. We're going to talk about in a minute, is it only Mi Meriva or maybe other things? Is that Hashem as an all-knowing God and just telling, you know, hinting to him because he has knowledge of the future, which is something we've spoken about. How do you, you know, balance divine foreknowledge and free will? Well, we won't re-prosecute that for everyone's sake again. Ayin the Rami Milchus Tshuva, the Ravid there, and other shittos which we have talked about in the past. But before we get to some of the answers, I just want to leave you, quote the Rav. So the Rav in Vision and Leadership, again, he didn't write the Sefer, but it's based on a lot of his notes and lectures, etc. He's in the first paragraph over here is like, why is Moshe dying? He's the Redeemer, he's the one who got the Torah, he sacrificed everything, his family, for Klal Yisrael. What's going on right now? Because of, you know, a little thing that happened at Mei Meriva. And just skipping to the second paragraph in page number 10, on source number 10, the top of page 4. Many theories have been advanced by our commentators concerning Moses' death in the desert. But none of the answers satisfies. The Torah uses unequivocal language. It is humanly impossible to grasp the rationality of Moses' death. Death in general, and Moses' death in particular, belong to the realm of, like, the beginning of this week's Parsha, Zos Chukas HaTorah. We just cannot understand or comprehend what is happening to Moshe. The Rav's calling it a chok. It's just, again, he goes on to explain the, a possible explanation, which is the Rav's suggestion, which we're not going to get into. But it highlights our problem that we just don't understand it. So we're going to do our best to try and explain some of the mainstream approaches. The way we're going to structure it is we're going to go through Shitas Rashi, ask some questions on Rashi, answer them. Then we're going to go through the Barbanel, the Rambam, and hopefully the Ramban. So that is the plan, but we got to get moving. So Rashi famously, and that's why I'm not going to spend so much time on it, the main problem for Rashi, he details a lot of the story and how they went to originally one rock, they went to the wrong rock. Again, we'll leave that for right now. And 11 and the rock that he hit, ended up only doing a couple of drops. He hits it a second time. But let's go to Rashi in source number 13. So skip 11 and 12 for right now and go to 13. So Yan Lohimantim B. Actually, let's start with Rashi, I believe, in source number 15, and we'll get back to source 13 in a second. Start with source 15. Rashi in source number 15. Lahakdi Shane. We're on top of page 5. She'ilu dibartim alatzela v'hotzi haisim hayisa mekudesh le'ine ha'ida. That if you would have, Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock, and it would have been a greater kiddush Hashem if Moshe would have spoken to it and then water would have come out, and instead he hit it. Why would it have been a bigger kiddush Hashem? V'omrim ma'asela zeh she'inu medaber v'inu shemeya v'inu sarach lefarnasa mekayim diburo shel makom. A rock doesn't speak, it doesn't hear, it doesn't need parnasa, but still when Hashem tells it to do something, it listens. Kal v'chomer anu. So too, we listen when Hashem tells us something to do. So because of that kal v'chomer that could have been said, that Moshe, if Moshe would have spoken to the rock, and Moshe hits the rock instead, so that, okay, it was still a kiddush Hashem, obviously, but it wasn't as big of a kiddush Hashem as it could have been. And therefore, that was Moshe's sin. Moshe hits the rock instead of speaking to the rock. And that is, when everyone's reading Rashi on Chumash, you know, doing Shnai Mikra or looking through the Parsha, that is the most classic approach. Again, you clear, you look through the instructions, Hashem tells him to speak to the rock, Moshe hits the rock, and it's very clear to be able to say, and it fits very well with, you know, the description of the psukim. It's a good read. That first instruction say speak, and then he hits, and that could have been, and Moshe could have caused a bigger kiddush Hashem. But there are going to be a lot of problems with this approach. But before we do, I just want to call your attention to one other Rashi that, you know, people often gloss over, which is source number 13. Source number 13 is also here. What does it mean, Yan lo hemantim bi, that you didn't have emun in me? Gila hakasav, she'ilulei cheidze belvad hayu nichnosen le'eretz. That if it wasn't for this chait, they would have gone into Eretz Yisrael. Kidei she'lo yomru aleihem ka'avon shar dor hamidbar. Because Moshe would have been included maybe in a different punishment. Everyone would have said, hey, he sinned at chait hamaraglin. That it was decreed on Klal Yisrael that after Chet Hamaraglim, they would not go into Eretz Yisrael. So if Moshe and Aaron didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, you know what everyone would say? They sinned at Chet Hamaraglim, and that's why they are not going into Eretz Yisrael. But as Rashi points out, there's maybe things worse about this sin than there are worse sins than this sin. When Moshe seems to question whether Hashem has the ability to supply enough meat to all of Klal Yisrael, but why does then this sin get treated so harshly? Yes, maybe there are sins that are more severe that Moshe Rabbeinu might have done. But the reason why this one gets flagged and the reason why this one gets punished is because it was done in the presence of Klal Yisrael. So it was a bigger chilul Hashem, it was a bigger desecration of Hashem's name. Okay, yeah, Moshe didn't listen. But Moshe didn't just not listen to Hashem. He did it in front of all of Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, that's going to magnify it and make it a much worse sin. And similarly, in source number 14, Rashi has a similar idea in another place in Bamidbar. But either way, what emerges is for Rashi, the main sin, as all of us knew coming into this year, is hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. The Ramban and others, again, there must be at least six or seven questions on this Rashi. We're not going to go through all of them, but I just want to note some of them in the Ramban. So the Ramban is in source number 16. And we're going to make a couple of these points throughout this year, and I just think it's important to track them in the Mefarshim. How does the Ramban start before he quotes Rashi? Normally the Ramban starts, and he quotes Rashi. And then he, you know, asks his questions. But here he starts with an introductory sentence. Hachet b'moshe v'aron, source number 16, we're on page number 5. Hachet b'moshe v'aron b'mei meriva, eino misfarsim b'kasav. It's not clear in the pasuk. It's not publicized, literally. Right? We don't know what it is. And it's just we're going to see a lot of these examples, that this was something clearly that the Rishonim were struggling with. They didn't know. And they were doing their best to solve the problem, but there's no great, clear answer. And I wish I had all the answers, but if, you know, Rashi, the Ramban, the Rambam, the Barbanel, Rabbeinu Chananel, Rabbeinu Bachya, Rav Hirsch, Rav Schwab, all of them, you know, have to take their stab, you know, who am I to try and take my own? But it's difficult. It's very difficult. So he quotes Rashi in the next few lines, and if you go to the next paragraph, he says, I have a bunch of problems with Rashi. V'yedivrei agadahim, Rashi is quoting Chazal, avalo neschavru, they're problematic. Ki mi'achar shetziva kach es hamata. Hashem, we saw, tells Moshe, take a staff. What do you need the staff for? Yesh b'mashima sheyakobo. What is he telling you to take a staff for? To hit the rock. Right? V'ilu hayabertsono b'dibur b'vad. If Hashem just wanted Moshe to speak to the rock instead of hitting the rock, Mahamata Zebiado. Why is he telling him to take the staff? Again, we've noted that other people are going to say that the staff is playing a very important role in the symbolism, Rav Hirsch, Rav Schwab, etc. But at face value, Ramban's making a great point. Why is Moshe's not told to do anything with the staff? If anything, also, what happened the last time? Hashem told him to hit it when he took the staff. Okay, so the Torah didn't tell you that he was supposed to hit the rock. But that's the clear indication if you're told to take a staff and not told anything.
That time he wasn't told to speak. He was only told to hit.
Right.
This time he's only told to speak.
Correct, but he's also not. So why is he taking a staff?
He always had a staff in his hand. To do miracles.
Where? Find me the last time.
Every
Makkah in Mitzrayim. But we're 40 years later. Find me the last time that Moshe has used his staff.
The Torah glosses over 38 years in the desert.
Granted. But we're in Parshas Chukas. We're not in Parshas Kisisa or anything like that. Find me the last time that Moshe uses his staff. It doesn't happen often. So much so that I referenced the idea. We're not going to go through it right now. But Rav Hirsch says that from the fact that Moshe had to get his staff from the Ohel Moed, he puts out that the staff is Lifnei Hashem. He thinks it's Moshe's staff that's Lifnei Hashem. And the staff he hasn't used since he did the Makos. And Moshe felt like he needed his staff to prove his authority. And then he went back 40 years in time. And he's like, what have we accomplished over 40 years? And Moshe felt so much lack of confidence as a result of having to get his staff, which he has not used in 40 years. That's Rav Hirsch's approach. Yeah.
Aaron's staff is also
a Moed. Rav Hirsch says, yes, but there are others, including Rav Hirsch's Talmud, Rav Schwab, and also Rabbi Liebtag from Gush, who suggest that it's really Aaron's staff. That it's Aaron's staff that's Lifnei Hashem. Yes, but what did Hashem tell Moshe there? Hashem told Moshe after Korach, right, it happens to work really well. Hashem tells Moshe, whenever there's a rebellion, what should he do? Show them the staff. So what happens now that there's a rebellion? Show the staff, and that's why they took his staff. So it's a very clever read. What exactly is the sin then? Maybe that Moshe didn't go directly for the staff the way that Hashem told him, which is, again, we're not getting into right now, but the Ramban is making a good point. Why is he taking the staff and then not using? So skipping down, question number two. The Ein Hanes Gadol Bedibur Yosir Mehaka. Is there really a greater miracle if you speak to the rock and then hit to the rock? I don't know about you, but the last time I hit a rock, does water come popping out? Is there a difference between I say to the orange juice, make it rain? Or if I hit the orange juice and it makes it rain? No, because neither one is a natural phenomenon. So I don't understand this Kal Vachomer. What did Moshe do that he minimized the Kiddush Hashem? Ki hakol shava itzel hasela. Everything is equal to the rock. Everything's the same by the orange juice. Orange juice doesn't make it rain. A rock doesn't produce water. And then, that's question number two of the Ramban. And then,
Moshe was very into having a unique death for Korach that never happened before.
Correct.
So maybe, we already saw that hitting the rock, that's a miracle that we know can happen. Speaking to the rock is a new miracle. Maybe there's some...
Okay, but is there such a difference between speaking and hitting? That's the Ramban's question.
There's a difference between whether the Korach died in an earthquake or died by... self-immolation or whatever.
Right. So it happens to be there are people, like for example, of Yosef Albo and the Sefer HaYikarim, who make a very strong parallel between Moshe's response by Korach and here. And that maybe Moshe messed up and Moshe should have done a miracle before going to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and taking his own initiative, which is a bigger concept, which we're not going to get into right now. But either way, that's the Ramban's question number two. The question number again. So number one, why is he telling him to take a staff? Number two, why is there such a difference between speaking and hitting? And then number three, and this is a strong, strong question, and which we're going to get back to in a minute. V'ol lama amar b'zeh ma'altem bi. Moshe thought he made a mistake. That, first he tried speaking to the rock. It was the wrong rock. Then he tried hitting the rock. Only a couple drops came out. And then he hit it a second time. Moshe is doing the best he can. He didn't do it intentionally. It was a mistake. So, ma'altem bi? You rebelled against me? What's the rebellion?
Mistake.
He made a mistake. The Ramban doesn't say this, but lo ha'emantem bi? You didn't have emunah in me?
If you take money that's hektish by mistake, you're still doing me.
So we're going to get to that. Maybe that might be ma'altem bi. That might be Ma'altim B that some people are going to explain, and that might be the answer to the Ramban's question. But the Ramban's highlighting that if this is Moshe's mistake, I'll frame it slightly differently than the Ramban. Does it make sense that Moshe's not going to go into Eretz Yisrael because of a mistake like this? It seems a minor infraction at best. So Rashi might fit very well with the psukim, and we'll get back to that point in a minute, but it doesn't explain the severity of it. What did Moshe do so bad? Okay, so, you know, you're going to have the classic a sicha, like I saw Rav Lichtenstein gave a sicha in yeshiva, about when you could make a Kiddush Hashem or reach your potential and you don't, even if it's a small level. So that is a travesty. And obviously, you know, and therefore we should try and be the best that we can. And on Moshe Rabbeinu's level, this is such a big mistake. And that you understand it, but the psukim make it sound lo hemantem and ma'altem. And that's the reason why Moshe is not going to go to...
Moshe was never supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, but the psukim clearly are indicating here that that is a result of Mei Meriva. Right, so we referenced, we spoke about it a couple minutes ago, but it seems like over here. So that is the Rashi that you all know and love. Those are the Ramban's questions. Before we move on from Rashi to the other approaches, there seems to be a little bit more complicated, you know. Sometimes, you know, in the Shurim, I like to quote Rashi, and even though I know you all know the Rashi, because I think that sometimes certain points get overlooked. For example, that point about the Kiddush Hashem before, that's why it's treated so severely. But there's another Rashi here. If we looked a couple of parshas earlier, we referenced this before in the other Rashi, that Rosha seems to have a pretty bad comment, and it's understood in different ways of Chazal, that Moshe says, is there enough meat to be able to be slaughtered, to be able to feed all of Klal Yisrael, seemingly doubting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to provide meat to Klal Yisrael. And Rashi says, he's quoting the different views in Rabbi Akiva, but when he references the sin of Mei Meriva in that context, in source number 18, if you look on the third line in the bold, what does he say the sin is? You would expect him to say, hitting the rock, instead of speaking to the rock. But that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, Shimu na hamorim, which other people are going to say that Moshe got angry. We'll see that in a couple minutes. But Rashi seems to indicate here that the sin in source number 18 is Shimu na hamorim. Speak to, you know, listen, you rebels, that you rebelled against me, and Moshe's harsh tone. But how does that fit with the other Rashi, right? Everyone knows Rashi says Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. But over here in Perek Yud Aleph in Bamidbar, Rashi seems to indicate that the sin is Shimu na hamorim. So it's not my question. The Mizrahi and the Gorariyeh on Rashi are bothered by this. Source number 19. This I just gave you for the Gorariyeh. He's definitely shorter, and he says from here it sounds like again here being in Chukas and our pasuk that according to Rashi the sin was speaking to the hitting the rock instead of spinning the rock. But in Parshas Baaloscha Rashi makes it sound like it's Shimu na hamorim. That the reason it sounds like the sin is that Moshe got angry. So I'm on the third line on the top of page 6. V'efshar lomer, the lav dafka naka. You know, you could say he doesn't mean it. Shimu na hamorim, ela nakat reish the kra. He's just quoting the beginning of the pasuk, but really v'seif samach haseif of the kra. Really, 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 Rashi thinks the sin was speaking to the rock, hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. But why did he quote Shimu na hamorim? You know, you knew what he was talking about. Or he gives a second possibility that maybe the anger is what caused him to. It's a combination of the two, which we'll get back to in a second. But that doesn't seem to be the case, right? We quoted the pasuk in Tehillim earlier, Kuvav Lamed Gimel. So what does Rashi in Tehillim say? Kihimru, Moshe va'aron es rucho. That really Moshe and Aaron made Hashem angry, b'shimu na hamorim, with listen rebels. So, okay, we're at time number 2 that Rashi quotes this pasuk. So if it was just, he was referencing the idea, okay, once, twice, how about we got 3 times? If you look in source number 21, psukim that we say every week, you know, I don't have the best voice in the world, so I won't do the Karbach version, but Moshe v'Aaron b'chohana v'shmuel b'kori shmo korem l'Hashem v'hu yanim, and then Hashem, going to pasuk chas, Hashem Elokeinu ata anisam kel no se hayisa lahem vino came alilosam. You took vengeance on their sins, referring to Moshe and Aaron. So what was their sin according to Rashi there? Hayisa vino came hayisa alilosam in source number 22. Moshe va'Aaron shimu na hamor. We have 3 times that Rashi seems to say that the chet of Mei Meriva was not hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. Rather, it is Shimuna Hamorim. So it's Shimuna Hamorim. That sounds like it's that Moshe getting angry and calling them rebels rather than his hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. So the Maral's answer of Lav Dafka Nakad, or the anger is the reason. So the Gurari has a great piece. The Gurari is the Maral in source number 23, bottom of page number 6, who explains that really they're coming from the same place. That both, it looks like two sins, being angry and hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, but really, in fact, they are one. Because someone who does a mitzvah Hashem derech kas is lacking emunah. He said someone who has emunah, someone who has complete faith, so he is going to be someone who is happy. He's someone who's going to be joyous. He's someone who is going to be, you know, excited and exalted. But if someone is angry, so what does that indicate when he's doing Hashem's commandment? That he is not going to be having full emunah. Because if he had full emunah, he would not be angry. That is the Maharal's take. If you just look at in the fourth line, Umisha osa mitzvah Hashem derech kas b'pra kasher nasa lehem neis hazeh kibosha asim she'amru shimna amorim v'chein shehiko zeh ein zeh emunah. If you hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock, that is not emunah. Ki emunah hu misha boteach bo yisbarach. When you have emunah, when you have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ein lo bo rak simcha. You should only have happiness and joy. She'zeh inin emunah she'mamin uboteach bo. You trust in Hashem. And if you trust in Hashem, v'imim habitachon, hasimcha. Aval imkas in kan emuna. And therefore, he says that shimuna hamorim, and hitting the rock, and the lack of emuna, are going hand in hand. Namely, it's because Moshe got angry, and because Moshe, why would Moshe get angry? It's because it's, again, coming from the same place, shimuna hamorim on the one hand, and hitting the rock on the other hand, of a lack of emunah. That is the Maharal's suggestion and how he thinks, how he's going to explain the pasuk, the lack of emunah, because emunah and simcha are synonymous with one each other. But either way, that's how he explains the difference in the Rashi, is that really both are true, that and they're really one sin, and it's all about a lack of emunah, and therefore that's going to lead to kas, and that's going to cause you to not listen to Hashem's instruction. But moving on from Shitas Rashi, we have some other perspectives that I would like to highlight. So again, we've quoted the Abarbanel in the past, and I'll give the same disclaimer that I always do with the Abarbanel. He writes at length. I did not see all of the Abarbanel. But the Abarbanel starts, after his questions, he doesn't always do this, with, I have seen 10 answers. 10 answers, and he goes through them one by one, and he's, let me tell you why every single one of them is wrong. Every single one of them is wrong. And he, look how he starts off in the beginning in source number in source 24, we're in the top of page 7. Harasicha beinecha kol haydeos. I've shown you all the opinions that are out there. Again, he didn't have access to Rav Schwab, Rav Hirsch, and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. He would have to add more on his list. V'kama rechokim min ha'emes. They are so far from the truth. V'limcha tashas l'dayti. I'm going to convince you. So here's the Abarbanel suggestion. Okay, the Abarbanel suggestion is that Moshe and Aaron are getting punished. Why is Aaron getting punished? And why is, again, what's the severity of Moshe's punishment? So the Barbanel suggests, what is the main reason they're getting punished? We've been assuming this entire time that it's because of the story of Meriva. Barbanel says, no. Not true. Not true. You know why they got punished? Both of them had a sin in their past that they needed to be punished for. So what was Aaron's sin? Chet ego. That Aaron caused, he had good intentions, he was trying to stall for Moshe, but what ended up happening as a result? Chet ego. And what ended up happening to those people? They died. You know what happened as a result of them dying? They didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. So you know what Midah Kenegan Midah is for causing those people to die? Aaron is not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. But did Aaron worship the eagle? Is he as bad? No. So we're not going to punish him with them because he didn't do nearly the same type of sin as them. And it would look bad, right? It would look bad, and it's not fair to Aaron because he didn't sin it nearly as egregiously as they did. So Hashem is going to hold off on Aaron's punishment. That's when it comes to Aaron. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu, when did Moshe Rabbeinu sin? This one's a little less obvious, but yes, the Chet Hamaraglim, the sin of the spies. We spoke about that a couple weeks ago, right? That what was Moshe's sin? That the Bnei Yisrael just wanted a scout to be able to figure out the best way to conquer the land. Hashem doesn't tell him, and all of a sudden Moshe starts adding instructions. Find out whether the people is strong or not, what's the nature of the land, etc. Hashem did not command him to do any of those things. And Moshe had good intentions, the Barbanel says. Moshe was trying to do a, you know, trying to highlight. If you realize how strong this people is, and Hashem is still being able to conquer them. Do you realize what chesed Hashem is doing for you? So he was trying to do them a favor to appreciate what Hashem did. But look what ended up happening as a result. The Chet HaMeraglim. And what was the punishment of the Chet HaMeraglim? They're all going to die in the Midbar. So who caused Chet HaMeraglim? Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, he didn't mean to do that. But he caused all of them to not enter Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, as a result, Hashem said, your sin is not nearly as bad as what happened to the Meraglim. So you're not going to get punished now, but you're also not going to get go into Eretz Yisrael. Right?
So why is the Korban and Bar Mitzvah has to answer up all those
psukim? We have to talk about all those psukim.
It doesn't mention anything else.
Okay, great. So
they say, well, this is the only reason without this, you would have gone in.
Look, the Barbanel's not done yet. Yes. He's still prosecuting, and don't worry, after he gives his opinion, he's going to give you, I believe he says his 12 reasons that he's right, but I think he gives 13. So I don't know if he lost count in the middle or not. We won't quote all 12, but we're still just getting to the approach. So again, number one is that the main sin that Moshe and Aaron did is not at Mei Meriva, because there's no sin. What do they do wrong? It's not that big a deal. Also, why is it Aaron? So it must be Aaron's getting punished for the Chet HaEgel. Moshe is getting punished for Chet HaMeraglim. Okay, but then what happens? Mei Meriva happens. And the Barbanel says, who's of all the 10 people that I read, whose pshat fits the pshat the best? The only one we've seen so far. Rashi. Rashi, that he points out that he switched from hitting to hit to speaking. But that's a minor infraction.
Isn't there somewhere where it says that God forgave Aaron?
So we're going to have to see, does it say that he forgave them?
I
don't think that there's an explicit passage that he forgave Aaron. Again, there are times, again, Aaron is treated like he was forgiven in certain points, but it seems that Hashem might, according to Barbanel, he still has, he came to go in Gadol, and he might be a Yud Tzadik, but there's a difference between being a Yud Tzadik and entering Eretz Yisrael. And because he caused other people, even if it was a mistake, and even if it was an earnest mistake, he's not going to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. So the Barbanel says that the psukim make the most sense like Rashi. He actually has a clever reference to the beginning of the psukim, that Bnei Yisrael were basically mocking Moshe and Aaron, that you caused us to die in the desert. And whose fault is that? This referencing this idea that it was Moshe through the Chet HaMeraglim and Aaron, and that caused Moshe and Aaron to have tremendous yeish, etc. And then Moshe rebels. You know, Moshe hits the rock instead of speaking to the rock, like Rashi. But the Barbanel has to go so far to the opposite extreme, which really highlights the problem with Rashi, that even though that's not such a grave offense, but it was a Pesach. It was an opening to now say, now is the time that I could punish you for the Chet HaMeraglim, and now is the time that I could punish you for the Chet HaEgel. Because you veered slightly. Aaron didn't sin? Okay. But Aaron's not really being punished for Mei Meriva. He's being punished for the Egel. Exactly. Exactly. And this he's using as a tool. And why does Hashem blame it in the Mei Meriva? If you look, we're in the fourth paragraph of the Barbanel, bottom page 7, like the sixth line in the bold. Yalam es pisho mipnei kvodo. You're going to cover up his big sin out of his honor, and then for a small little reason, like hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, you'll get a big maka. Skip down the line in the bold. It wasn't for Mei Meriva by itself. To cover v'lachos al kvodam tala ancham on Mei Meriva. It held it to it, and then he tells you, I'm saying exactly like Rashi. I'm taking Rashi, but I'm saying it doesn't make sense that they're going to get the punishment that they get for Rashi's sin. So I'm telling you, it was just an excuse to be able to punish them for their previous sins. And as I said, if you turn the page to the top of page number 8, the Barbanel says, this explains Vinei Yore al Misas Hadas Hazat Yud Beis Dvarim. Let me give you 12 proofs that I'm right. And I believe, again, that it's 13, if I remember correctly. But number one, how could it be we're talking about Moshe and Aaron. How could they get punished for Mei Meriva? Lo inyan kal kamei Meriva. They barely did anything at Mei Meriva. So you're talking about the two of the greatest people that ever lived, and they're going to not enter Eretz Yisrael for this small sin? It must be a bigger sin that we're referencing earlier. That's proof number one. Number two is, again, which is his number three. We're not going to go through all of them. I just, the ones that I found more compelling. Number three, right, that the Barbanel says, is this is Mida Kenegan Mida. They caused Bnei Yisrael to not enter Eretz Yisrael? So they're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. According to all the other Mefarshim, it's not Mida Kenegan Mida. Moshe and Aaron do something wrong, and as a result, they don't enter Eretz Yisrael. But according to the Barbanel, it's really Mida Kenegan Mida. Number four, why is Aaron getting punished? Why is Hashem even speaking to Aaron? He doesn't do anything. He Aaron lo diber velo hika. Avol nikra shama kedei l'shat from shneim yachad be'onash hamisa. Hashem purposely had Aaron come so that they could get punished together, because when Moshe hits the rock, originally Aaron wasn't there the first time, when the last time that this happened, when they needed water. So Hashem purposely called Aaron there so they would be subject to the same fate. And this explains beautifully all the psukim that we saw before, that Hashem's punishing Moshe and Aaron because of Bnei Yisrael. Lema'anchem, ol adivreichem. But if it was hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, what does that mean? But now it's because Moshe and Aaron caused them to sin. Since Moshe and Aaron caused them to sin, again, at Chet HaEgel and at Chet HaMeraglim, that's what it means that I got punished because of what happened to you. By the Chet HaEgel and by the Chet HaMeraglim. And the Barbanel rests his case at the end, many words later. V'zehu masha ratisi levaro b'davar hazeh v'hemanti shehu ha'emes gamor. This is what I wanted to explain to you. And trust me, this is the pshat. That is the Barbanel's approach, which is that Moshe and Aaron are not really being punished for Mei Meriva, they're being punished for the previous sins. But I want to leave you with just a couple other famous approaches, because we can't do the topic without referencing the ideas, which is the Rambam and the Ramban. So the Rambam is in the middle of speaking in Shmona Prakin, which is introduction to Pirkei Avos. And he's just talking about, again, his famous idea, the golden rule, that it's best to avoid extremes and to be somewhere in the middle. And there's a certain exceptions, for example, anger. And in that thing, he's just like, can't help himself. And we'll get back to that in a second. And he says, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's sin? He's the Adon HaRishonim and V'Hachronim, Moshe Rabbeinu. And it says that he, Lohem Mantem Bi, Alasher Marisem, Alasher Lokidashtem. So what was his sin? And the Rambam suggests that Moshe went to an extreme. He got angry. He got angry and he said, Shimu na Hamorim. So why was that such a big deal? So Hashem, the Rambam says in source 25, line 4, Dikdik Hashem Alav Sheya Ish Kamo Koas Bifnei Kal Yisrael B'makom She'in Ro'i Bokas. So the Ramban's going to get upset at this in a minute, but Hashem was angry. Why are you getting upset at Klal Yisrael? They don't deserve anger like this. Right, and this ended up constituting a Chilu Hashem, as the Rambam describes. What ended up happening? Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset at Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael sees Moshe getting upset at them. Again, Bnei Yisrael, the Rambam points out, are on such a high level. They're like, they had the Nevuah at Yam Suf, that greater than Yechezkel ben Buzi. They're on such a high level. So they say, why is Moshe Rabbeinu getting upset at us? A man like Moshe would never get upset at us unless Hashem was upset at us, and Moshe was relaying that anger of Hashem at us. But guess what? Hashem was not angry at them, according to the Rambam. He wasn't angry, and Moshe therefore caused a Chilul Hashem. Because what ended up happening is, B'nai Yisrael assumed that Hashem was angry at them, when in fact, he was not. And as a result, that caused a Chilul Hashem, and it wasn't so good. So if you look at the last two lines in the Rambam, V'kfar yatsanu mikavanas haperek. This really wasn't our topic here. I'm talking about something really totally different. Aval hitarnu safik misfekos haTorah. But we have solved a doubt of one of the greatest doubts in the Torah. Shehar be'nemerbo. That a lot has been written and said. V'har be'yishol. And many ask, Ezech e'chata. V'orach ma'shar amarnu, anachnu amasha nemerbo, v'emes Torah darka. The truth will show its way, you know. And the Rambam says, I've taken my best stab at it, and I think that this is the answer. It just really highlights that this was a question which bothered people. And the Rambam is in the middle of talking about something completely different, but he needs to give his answer of Moshe Rabbeinu, say this is answering the suffix of the Torah. And again, the Rambam's approach is really that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, which indicated to Bnei Yisrael that Hashem is angry, and Hashem wasn't angry, and therefore that was a Chilul Hashem. The Ramban really, really, really does not like this answer. He quotes the Rambam in his Perash al Torah, V'hosef hevel al havalim. He's just adding vanity to vanities, and he gets very upset. Nowhere does the Torah say, we have so many psukim that we read before about the description of what Moshe sinned, but no one mentions anger, right? We have shalohem mantembi. You know what emunah is not? Emunah is not anger. Eina onesh bavor kas. Moshe gets upset other times. And here the Torah doesn't even tell us that Moshe is angry. That Moshe was, when Shimunah HaMorim, according to the Ramban, Moshe was rebuking them. And they deserved rebuke. They were disrespectful. So what does it mean? Also, Aaron never gets angry. How do we understand Aaron according to this perspective of the Rambam? Right? Aaron never got angry in his entire life. Keep a shalom v'misha or halach meodo. So, and he also says, it must be that Hashem was so angry. Look at the way Bnei Yisrael attacked Moshe Rabbeinu and the way that they were complaining. And they're complaining not only against Moshe Rabbeinu, they're complaining against God. It doesn't get worse according to that. And according to the Rambam, why would they be angry? Why would Hashem not be angry? This is terrible what they did. And according to the Rambam, he's like absolving the people of any wrongdoing and any blame. And that doesn't make any sense. For that reason, the Ramban rejects the Rambam. And the Ramban gives, before he gives a Kabbalistic reason, which I don't understand, he quotes this opinion of Rabbeinu Chananel. And I just want to end with this and highlight this idea one more time, which I think is a theme I've been saying the entire shiur, and then the page number 9, source 27. Right before he quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, which is the approach besides for his Kabbalistic approach, which he prefers, v'hakarov min hadvarim shenemru b'zeh. The closest thing that I can say about this, v'hu tov lidchos hasho'el. And it's good enough to push off someone who's asking. So let me ask you a question. Before we see the answer, does that sound like he has extreme confidence in this answer? No, it's good enough. I have a good enough answer. You know, like a teacher asks a question in school and like gives a great word. I don't think this is the right answer, but I have a good enough answer. Like the teacher would be, no, I want the right answer. I don't want a good enough answer. But the Ramban's telling you, this is a good enough answer. And if someone asks you on the street, you could tell them this answer. But, and it really highlights what we started with, the quote from Soloveitchik. This is a Zos Chukas HaTorah. We're doing our best and trying to see what our commentators have said about it, but it is a perplexing and mysterious idea. But the Ramban quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel. What was the sin? So again, every detail, every word is under a microscope and under a magnifying glass. What could it possibly be? So Rabbeinu Chananel looks at the pasuk and says, "Hamin hasela hazeh notzi lachem mayim." Should we take out water from the sela? And you know what Bnei Yisrael understood? That Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron were basically saying, "We will take out the water from the rock, not the Ribono Shel Olam." And it should be that every time that they were doing a miracle for Hashem, through for Hashem and for, you know, via doing it for Bnei Yisrael, they should say, we're doing it as a miracle of Hashem. And that would be a great, you know, a rebellion. And therefore, B'nai Yisrael makes a mistake and ends up, you know, attributing it to Moshe and Aaron instead of to Hashem. And that's why the Ramban continues, or quoting Rabbeinu Chananel, that explains some of the Lashonos. Me'altem bi. What's me'altem bi? That idea which we referenced before. It's nena mina hektish. Moshe and Aaron are benefiting from hektish, because B'nai Yisrael are assuming that they did it, not Hashem. And similarly, lohem mantem bi, what is not having emunah? Yotze el B'nai Yisrael. It could be referring to B'nai Yisrael, that B'nai Yisrael had emunah in Moshe and Aaron, but they didn't have emunah in me. I was trying to lahakti sheini, to do a miracle for Hashem, and instead B'nai Yisrael attributed to Moshe and Aaron. So that does explain some of the Lashonos. And just to summarize, we started with the question, what was the sin? What possibly could they have done? Whose fault is it? Why Moshe and Aaron being blamed? Is it Moshe and Aaron? Is it Bnei Yisrael? And we saw the approaches of Rashi. You know, we noted that Rashi might be a little more complex. We noted the approach of the Gur Aryeh. We said the novel approach of the Abarbanel. We quoted the idea of the Rambam about the anger, and we quoted about the Ramban that it's Bnei Yisrael attributing this to Moshe and Aaron. And just, again, there's over 15 suggestions, and it really is a remarkable testament to the Mefarshim and how they're trying to do their best to struggle with the text. And, you know, sometimes, and this is just the lesson that I think really emerges, intellectual honesty and noting there are problems that I just don't have answers to. But we're going to do our best, even when it's almost an impossible job. I'm going to, again, the Barbanel is pretty convinced that his is right, but some of the Ramban is hedging and being intellectually honest and trying, but yet still trying and putting in an effort and doing our best to try and do work, even when a task seems insurmountable, is something which clearly emerges from the Mefarshim and the Rishonim, the Achronim, who've been struggling to understand this text, and so too in our lives. You know, sometimes we have things that are insurmountable, but we should try and do our best to overcome them. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try, and we might not always have the greatest solution to every single problem, but that doesn't mean that we don't do our best to try and solve the problem. Have a great Shabbos.